Welcome to Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast with Sam and Dennis. We are coming to you from our top secret headquarters at Project Quantum Leap, but you can find us online at fwwquantumleappod.com or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Fate's Wide Wheel. And please do us a favor by hitting the subscribe button on iTunes.
I think that's one of the interesting things, too, about Quantum Leap is the way that the time travel in Quantum Leap is purely fantasy, let's be honest. But that said, I do enjoy the fact that, because he's displacing other people, you don't have to deal with some of that, the stickiness that's caused by, like, what happens if you meet your past self? Because it's not necessarily, like, like Back to the Future, where Marty is literally physically, everything about him is actually in 1955. And it's like, but he didn't exist in 1955. And does that mean that all of a sudden there's something, like, there's now an aberration
that there's extra weight in the world?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
On that note,
let's dive in.
Hello, everybody.
It's Sam, Dennis, and we're joined once again by our good friend Christopher Stewart.
And, Chris. Chris and I saw each other last night,
yes.
And he told me to stop calling him Christopher all the time.
Only my mom calls me Christopher, and it's when I'm being bad.
So this week's episode, we're talking about Animal Frat.
We are indeed.
Yes.
And Animal Frat was directed by Gilbert Shilton, written by Chris Rupenthal, aired January 3rd, 1990. Our leap date is October 19th, 1967. And Sam has leapt into Newt Wilton, also known as Wild Thing. Mm-hmm.
We should give a special mention to Chris Rupenthal.
Yeah.
He also wrote Glitter Rock.
Yes, he did.
Which features the song Fate's Wide Wheel.
Yes, indeed.
He also wrote that.
He also wrote Good Morning Peoria.
He wrote that. He also wrote the Halloween episode.
Yes. That episode, which will not be named.
That episode, which will not be named.
Yeah, well, we should also give another shout-out to Gilbert Shilton. Good for Shilton, because he directed Right Hand of God, Disco Inferno, and Americanization of Machiko. And two of those episodes, I don't really like. One of those episodes is very good, but I think that, in some ways, Disco Inferno almost gets left in the dust with some of the other season two episodes we've had, because they've been truly great. And I think that, I'll just get out there right now, Animal Frat is one of those episodes. I think it's fantastic. It's probably one of my favorite second season episodes. And I don't think that there's any coincidence that, Rupenthal wrote this and Good Morning Peoria for the second season, because they're two standouts. So, kudos to him.
It's been a while since I've watched this episode.
Yeah.
I went back and rewatched it.
I feel like it's one of those episodes that I've seen a lot. What's TV Guide tell us?
TV Guide says, Sam Scott Bakula leaps into 1968 as the wildest bro on Fraternity Row.
Oh God, how is that not my nickname?
Yeah. But he has a purpose beyond guzzling brewskis. He must prevent an anti-war radical, played by Stacey Edwards, from making a fatal mistake by blowing up the chemistry building. And so we dive in. So he leaps into the middle of a frat party, and he's on the receiving end of
just getting a keg.
Just getting a keg poured on. Yeah, it's not even like a beer funnel or a beer bong or.
It's not a keg stand. No. I've done various types of binge drinking. Sorry, Mom. I have never had them pop open the keg and just throw it in
and
my
just,
face
yeah.
like that.
Just dump it right in your
face.
So
that's some next level shit. They were doing it bigger in 1966 than in 1998 when I was
Yeah. So speaking of the leap at the beginning of the episode, we should say fond farewell to Sam introducing the episodes himself.
Yeah. Yes.
So this one started off with actually showing clips from Kamikaze Kid. Because that was the rerun from last week. Going into this episode.
Yeah, yeah. And so we get, the brief leaping around through time
thing.
Stuff that we normally get from Sam. But it will be the last time.
Yes, yeah.
We'll talk more about that on the next episode.
So we get this opening scene. Louie is playing.
It is indeed.
Some guys up on the I don't know if it was a fireplace or what it was, but they were up on a very narrow ledge.
Yeah, they are. And thank goodness the song is actually there, because in the Region 1 DVDs, it was not there.
It is replaced, and Matt Dale points out in his book that it's an incongruity, because like the actors are clearly mouthing Louie,
yeah.
But I don't know if we talked about this in an episode that you've guessed it on before, Chris, but when they put the Blu-rays out, seasons 2 through 4, they wanted to put them out as cheaply as possible, so they didn't reobtain the music rights.
Oh.
So.
That actually reminds me of something. I got Married with Children.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of Frank's
Love and Marriage or something,
there's some, I don't even know what the fuck it is, and it threw me off.
Oh, God,
like,
yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it's same thing on this show. So unless a song is specifically referenced by a character or someone is singing along with it, for the DVD releases, they went through and they took out the original music and they put in public domain music. Luckily for the Blu-rays, they restored those.
Yes.
So he's walking around. He is at a huge mess of a frat party.
It's a pretty good fucking party.
Yeah, okay.
Indeed.
I kind of err more towards the side of Sam the way I was when I was in college. So I did not attend these kind of parties.
Really?
When I was in college.
I've been to several of these kinds of parties before. Up into when the first guy talks to Sam and is talking to him. And then pukes on him.
Oh, yeah.
That has actually happened.
Well, we're introduced to some few other characters before that. We're introduced to Scooter.
Yeah.
We're introduced to Guna, played by Brian Haley. He stuck out at me because he was a stand-up comic that was kind of coming up at the same time as Drew Carey back in the early 90s. And they have a very similar look to each other.
Absolutely.
So much that a few years later, Brian Haley guested on an episode of The Drew Carey Show as a Drew Carey look-alike.
Wow. Wow.
And then, he meets Guna and Scooter. And I didn't get the name of the other character. Not Duck. No.
Hags.
Is that his name? Okay.
Yeah, who is Stuart Fratkin. The funny thing about Stuart Fratkin is I recognized him immediately, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, from Teen Wolf 2. Because he plays the character of Styles. He did not originate that role in Teen Wolf 1. But in Teen Wolf 2. Which, another thing that's funny about Teen Wolf 2 is the movie was supposed to be like a direct sequel, same cast, everything, Michael J. Fox, right? And at the last minute, like, you know, Michael J. Fox is like, I'm not going
to do that. No. Actually, I remember reading, it's in one of Michael J. Fox's memoirs, like, even at the time when he accepted the first Teen Wolf movie, he didn't know why he did it. By that point, he was pretty well established with family ties.
Sure, yeah.
He didn't need it. Like, even reading the script, he knew how bad it was. And actually, Teen Wolf, the studio thought Teen Wolf was so bad, they were not going to release it. It sat on a shelf until after Back to the Future came out, and Back to the Future was a huge hit. And they were like, oh,
let's make some money off this one.
So then they released Teen Wolf.
It was a turd, but I loved that turd.
So much so I'm a nerd. I know way too much Teen Wolf trivia. So much so that when they released Teen Wolf in Italy for the subtitles and for the voiceover, they changed Scott's name, because that was Michael J. Fox's character's name in Teen Wolf. They changed it to Marty.
Oh, my God!
To capitalize on the Back to the Future thing.
Wow.
Right. To bring it back from Teen Wolf back to point on
my bad.
So no. So we have this first scene here. I had totally forgotten that this first segment ends with the guy coming up and puking.
Yeah.
On Sam until he walks up, you got one of the you throw the best part, he's like, oh crap, I remember how, and then
and the look of just disgust on Sam's face. It's just like it's not even that he's mad. Mm. It's just literally like, this is the worst sleep-in I've ever had, you know? Yeah. I once thought I was getting shot with a shotgun, and I prefer that to this.
So we go into the opening credits.
Yes.
And then we come out from the opening credits, and then he makes his way up to his bedroom, and this is when on his way up, he sees that he is at Meeks College, which is a fictional college somewhere in California.
Yeah, they never really give us a...
Is it in California?
According to one of the, I think the Quantum Leap Wiki or one of the websites I was looking at,
Matt lists it as California as well. But again, it's funny because it just says Meeks College, California, as opposed to, like, you know, Sacramento.
Makes his way into the room, gets a look at himself in the mirror. He is a big...
Yeah.
There's a reason they call him Wild Thing.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
He fits the bill of being sort of the big... big dumb jock.
Mm-hmm.
As Chris raises his hand.
The actor playing that particular role is Jeff Benson.
Newt is not alone in his bedroom. He has...
A woman. comes out from under the sheets. Yes.
Which has happened to me before.
And then another woman. Then comes out.
Which has not happened to me before.
So, yeah, Mayor anxious for him to finish what he has started.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Sam is not so anxious.
Yes, I have to go study, I think he says. Yeah. And he gets
said
out of there.
No fraternity guy ever.
Which is interesting because I think we get a peek into, who Sam was when he was in college, which is something that we never really have gotten before. We know he went to college young. We know he's got all these doctorates. Mm-hmm. But to kind of start to hear a little bit about his experience and get a feel for who he was in college, I think is interesting. And it's also, the Boy Scout side of Sam has been well established at this point. So it's not surprising that, he would see these two half-clothed women in his bed and be like, I gotta go. See you later. As opposed to like, wow, well, this is the best leap ever.
Oh, for real.
So that's nice little reinforcement of that aspect of his personality. And then, he gets out of Dodge.
Yeah. And so after that, I think we cut to the next morning and then in chemistry class.
That's right. Yeah. And his buddies are
shooting water torpedoes.
Yeah. And they're taking aim at a number of things.
Yes, the protest table. Oh God, the guy on the lawnmower.
I love it so hard. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's a bit of slapstick humor that you don't see a whole lot on Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
So it is. Yeah.
When they were targeting like the protesters, I was like, that's a shitty thing.
Yeah.
To say the least.
But when they hit the lawnmower guy dead on, I laughed really hard and I was like, oh my God, direct hit. And then I felt terrible. The poor guy just trying to make a living.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you got to think to yourself, it's like, that was a guy's role. His whole job on this episode was to get on that lawnmower, get hit in the face with a water balloon, and fall.
Oh, yeah.
I have to admit, he did a very fine job.
So from this, Al shows up almost right away. Talk about, this is when the protesting is starting over the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. This is where we get it dropped that, does Sam say or Al say that Newt is actually an art major? Sculpting, yeah. That's just kind of like,
what?
Yeah, I was just like,
he's in it for the nude models, really.
Only thing that I can think of is like that was his quote major, and he was actually on a football team or something. And that was the BS major that they had the football players sign up for. But we get the mission pretty early on here. Al says that there's an 87.6% chance that he is here to help Elizabeth Spokane, which is one of the protesters down at the table that they've just waterbombed. They're going to put a bomb in the chemistry building. And when it blows up, somebody's going to be killed. Yeah, there's going to be a student who wanders back in to get something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot to unpack in this particular mission. And it gets explored fairly well in the, 40-ish minutes that it's given. I think that the first thing that is interesting and of note is that the plot itself is loosely based on an incident that actually occurred on a campus. A bombing took place in Sterling Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison on August 24th, 1970. Four young people did it as a protest against the university's research connections with the military during the Vietnam War, and the bombing did end up killing a physics professor, a researcher, and injured three other people. This particular type of activism was not unheard of, during the late 60s, at the height of the, anti-war sentiment against Vietnam. And there are a lot of other films and television that cover similar things. Running on Empty is actually a great, great film with River Phoenix, Martha Plimpton, Judd Hirsch, and basically River Phoenix's family has been on the run for a number of years because his parents at one point committed a similar crime. It's just a great flick, and his performance is incredible. But yeah, again, this is not something that is necessarily an unknown quantity, if you will. You know, that stuff like this did actually happen, and that there has been plenty of film, television, and books about similar subjects. So.
Mm-hmm. My favorite being Mother Simpson from The Simpsons.
Oh my god, that's right!
I actually have a theory that I'm going to share with you guys later in this episode about this entire thing. But
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, so a couple of things to say real quick before we get to the next bit as well. I wanted to say that, honestly, we're like 5 minutes into the episode, and it's already head and shoulders above Portrait for Troy, and
how do you feel about Portrait for Troy?
Already this episode, and part of it is it's interesting to see the contrast between the two, because Troyan was made for the first season, and it was when they were, you know, it was the show was a little campy in some of those episodes. It was very much like, what genre can we duplicate for the you know, the monster of the week or whatever, and this episode is not that. You know, this episode, in spite of what I just said about the fact that there are you know, other media out there that have the similar storylines or whatnot, this episode feels very rooted in reality. I appreciate that.
Yeah, along that note, something that I noted, like, rewatching this episode again, is that the relationship just between the frat brothers, like, just like what they said, like with the water torpedoes, mm-hmm. and them sitting in the back class in this scene and an upcoming scene, like, their relationship just feels so lived in.
Yeah.
Like I could totally see, like, you spin these characters off in their own show.
It lasts half season.
Right. But I could see it. Like, they seem like, you know, like, kind of fleshed out characters for what little they have to actually do in the episode.
I completely agree with that.
So yeah, so as Sam leaves, he's like, yeah, I'll get the notes after class, and they look at each other, notes.
Yeah.
And so he goes down to apologize, and that's when we meet Duck.
Yeah.
Oh, that beret, that outfit. I want to note, this is in Matt's book. The actor who plays Duck is Darren Dalton.
Yeah.
And for his audition, he was given the speech that he gives later on in the episode at the rally. And so for his audition, he just decided to barge into the audition room, give the speech, and barge right back out.
Yeah.
And afterwards, he was like, oh my god, what did I do? But he got the part.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get to it later on. But he has such a dick line later in the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's two moments in particular where I feel like his performance just kind of rises above a little bit. And I'm like, good for you, man. Good for you.
But this is where we are introduced to Elizabeth.
Yes.
And Sam just chips in and says, hey, you know, if you're serious about this, I want to help. And she's skeptical. Duck is skeptical.
Yeah.
Duck has the line, deceptively smart people need to be watched.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, too, because I feel like the scene moment there with Elizabeth is very well done. And I think that, you know, she does a great job of being able to best Sam, basically, mm-hmm. at every turn. Like, Sam's struggling to figure out how he's going to find his way in. It's handled really, really well. Mm-hmm. And they both work well together. Stacey Edwards, who plays Elizabeth, you know, she's done a ton of stuff as well. And,
yeah.
You know,
and it's also
working now.
Yeah, and it's also refreshing to, because, like, so many episodes, it's like, he's there to stop someone from getting killed, or he's here to do that. And so his approach to stopping it is not always the most subtle.
Yeah.
But this is, like, a different approach. Like, if I'm going to stop her from bombing it in a day, like, I need to, like, to start working with her and and basically, like, try to get to know her to figure out, like, what her motivation is for doing this.
Absolutely.
So that I can stop it.
He's clearly struggling, and he's off kilter, and it gives a real great sense too of his displacement, I think, because he's not only is he struggling to try to figure out how to have a conversation with her, he's also struggling to figure out how to have a conversation with her as Wild Thing. You know, and mm-hmm. I think that it's really interesting sometimes, because in this episode in particular, there are some great moments where Sam tries to be the person that he's leapt into, or tries to at least
pretend,
maintain some sort of
that illusion.
Exactly. Whereas in other episodes, it's Sam. You know, like, sure, Help Me God is a great example. Fantastic freaking episode, but that's Sam. Yeah. There is no point when he is ever trying to be or pretend to be the guy that he's left into.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. So this is interesting to see that.
So from there, we jump back into class, back into our lecture class. How convenient that Elizabeth and Newt have a class together.
Right.
And all the frat brothers.
Yeah.
Hey, we got 45 minutes. We got to...
Exactly. Yeah,
we gotta keep this clipping along. The chemistry teacher just gives such an appropriately dry, bored, hate my life.
Yeah.
I'm not tenured yet.
Performance. Yeah. It's like one of those, like, I know nobody in this class is actually listening to me.
Right.
Or we're going to have someone about ready to start giving me a speech about how can you justify the chemistry department's part in the Vietnam War, which Elizabeth starts reading him the riot act.
Yeah. Yes, she does.
The Elizabeth is played, by the way, Stacey Edwards.
Yes.
She's one of those actors I feel like I've seen in everything. Looking at her IMDb page,
yes.
She's had a lot of like one-shot guest roles and a lot of TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I always like, sure, like she must have had her own TV show at some point or something because she looks so familiar.
Well, so this probably isn't it, but she did indeed have a lead-ish role. I mean, as much as of a lead role as one has on a soap opera, I guess. She was on Santa Barbara for 219 episodes.
That's probably it. My mom and my sisters, they love their soaps.
Yeah. Santa Barbara was one of them.
I watched a lot of those.
She also did 44 episodes, so about two seasons of Chicago Hope, which was the show that CBS came up with at the same time
that NBC came up with ER. It was one of those things like ER, Chicago Hope. I started watching Chicago Hope, and sure, that was the show that got killed.
Which, the truth of the matter is, like, looking back on it, Chicago Hope was the far better show.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah, it had Mandy Patinkin, and another actor who I can't think of. He went on...
Hector Elizondo.
Him. Yeah. There was another actor.
Peter Berg.
Yes. Yeah.
I can start my
own podcast of all of the TV shows that I had killed in the first two seasons just by watching them.
Oh, man.
Well, anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why she looks familiar. Okay.
Like I was saying earlier, I mean, she really is. She's great in this episode.
So in this scene, Sam steps up and he starts to help her out. And basically, they say, hey, have we thought about what did the South Vietnamese want?
Yeah, that's interesting because I would actually say that he doesn't help her out. Mm-hmm. Instead, he decides to engage in the conversation, but he does it in a way that's a little contrary to what she's, you know, I think it's kind of cool because he's adding perspective. He's adding another point of view to the conversation as opposed to being like, hey, Teach, she's right. You're so smart. You know what I mean? Instead, it's just sort of like, well, actually, there's more to this than just that discussion. And I think we should examine the full thing. And it's one of those moments where you're just kind of like, oh,
good for you,
Chris Rupenthal.
Imagine you're like a person in the class and you're watching the star football player who's a super frat guy stand up and deliver a thought-provoking and profound discussion point to what the teacher was saying and what Elizabeth was saying. You'd be like, what the fuck world am I in? What's going on?
Yeah. We talked about this before in previous episodes. Like, this would be like one of those moments where take Scott Bakula out for a moment.
Yeah.
Put that actor in and actually show the perspective of everybody else in class of the big dumb jock.
Yeah.
They were probably like, what the?
Right?
What?
Well, because the thing is, it's like they're hearing wild things voice. They're seeing wild things stand up there. You know, that would actually be really cool to get those moments.
So from there, we cut to outside, Sam running to catch up with Elizabeth to have a further talk with her.
And the interesting thing is he starts to really kind of make a little bit of headway with her.
Yeah.
But it gets undercut
by Scooter. Yeah. So it's either this or the previous scene where Sam and Al kind of come up with the idea that if Sam can get her to the luau, she won't be able to plant the bomb in the chemistry building, and the luau is the frat party that's coming up.
Yes.
Have we discussed Scooter being a pledge?
No, we actually haven't.
We haven't.
But, I guess we do find out.
They mention he's a pledge. Yeah, because he brings the lobsters in.
Oh, the lobsters. He's got the lobsters. Oh, and then they mention the lobster scene. That is kind of funny.
And they clarify, the one character clarifies, like, you know, what's the lowest form of life? A pledge.
That's right.
Yes.
What is with that guy's accent, by the way? Like,
I know, that's the thing. It's like, where...
At first I thought, oh, he's putting it on. And then it's like... No,
like he talks like that. Yes. Where are you? Yeah. And the only thing, and we'll come back to this later, because I noted in the frat there's a Confederate flag.
Oh, I was gonna bring
draped over the back of a couch.
There it is. I totally missed that.
Yeah,
that's why I asked if it was in California.
I mean, because of things we've discussed on previous episodes, obviously those things jump out at me now. But like they're in California, and sometimes I think it was just like a lazy thing on the part of the set designers, like, oh, we got this Confederate flag hanging around. Let's just drape it over the back of this couch, you know.
Or this is left over from those other three episodes we used it in. So.
I mean, it's hanging up on a wall in Ohio in Star-Crossed.
Right. Did they think that was a college thing in the 60s and 70s?
The only thing is, like, maybe this one character with the Southern accent, maybe he actually is from the South,
and
that's
he brought
where the Confederate flag comes from. Yeah.
But the lobster scene, let's just go back real quick.
Yeah.
That happens at the beginning. It is very charming and funny. Because he comes up to Sam with the lobsters. And he's like, what do you want me to do with the wild thing? And Sam's just like, what? Like, I have no idea why you have these lobsters. Like, why are you carrying a pair of lobsters around?
As someone who is the big brother of about 80 fellow recruits, that is something that will likely happen.
Oh, boy.
Like, there have been ample times where I've been talking to a friend or hungover from a party, and a player just like, hey Stewie, that's what they call me, hey Stewie, I got this thing that you needed, I need your signature for something. And I'd be like, what, why are you bringing me a bucket of chicken at 8 a.m.
Because that's what drunk Stewie told him.
That's right. That would be exactly what he said. You told me to do this 3 hours ago and KFC just opened. And I'm like,
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a fascinating subject. And I there's an article that I read in The Atlantic recently. And I think The Washington Post also did an article on the same subject. But there's a fraternity at Penn State where a student died, and the gist of it being that you know, he was fed some insane amount of drinks in a small amount of time, like 15 shots in an hour or something like that, and he ended up falling down some stairs, and so they just picked him up and put him on a couch, and they're like, he'll be fine. And at one point he got up off the couch with a concussion and, you know, multiple bruises and wounds, and he walked to what he thought was the front door. It was not, and he fell down another flight of stairs. And at this point, he fractured his skull. It was a mess. They picked him up and put him back on the couch, even though he's, like, got blood running out of his, you know, his ears, is, like, shaking, is, you know, they put him back on the couch. They left him there. They went, you know, did their thing the next morning. He was basically left there all day. By the time they got back, he's, like, ice cold. He's still alive. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. They got him to the hospital. He didn't make it. But the other thing is, it's like it was all on camera because the frat house is set up with cameras. So the cops got the footage of all this stuff. And, you know, and the worst part about it is that most of these guys got off scot-free. Like, nothing happened to them at all.
That's terrible.
And the thing is that they shut the fraternity down, but it just reopens under another name. It's like, it's insane. And the national organization for the fraternities is sort of like, well, obviously we don't condone this behavior, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And then they did, you know, they went a little deeper, and it turns out that a lot of these, like, national meetings and everything, they think of all these rules that they create like a joke. And I'm sure that there, you know, there are fine fraternities out there, because this is not something that happens everywhere, but...
It don't happen on ours.
Yeah.
Our national meetings are strict.
And it's just to hear stories like that, you know. And so to see the harmless fun they're having with Scooter, which in this scene manifests itself as him having to wear his underwear and his outside his pants, which again, Sam is like, why are you doing this?
Yeah. Carrying, like, a big thing of meat, hamburger.
Yeah, raw hamburger. And of course, Scooter's like, you told me to. Which at that point is when Elizabeth is like, I'm out.
I know.
Forget your luau.
Well, this is where Sam makes a pretty halfway compelling argument for the purpose of pledging. a fraternity, like the initiation and that whole,
yeah,
taking it back to like caveman days, proving your manhood.
Oh. Which I think that again, there's a fun way to do it. There's a fun way to kind of just be like, what are you willing to do? You know, you're gonna wear your underwear on the outside. You're willing to do that? You know,
right. You guys want a little glimpse into fraternity night? We had to, all the players just had to get a signature from each one of the brothers. Before you could fully pledge, right? But the brothers weren't giving up their signatures.
Oh, sure.
Willingly, right? Yeah. I was one of the good ones, so they got mine by doing fun stuff. One of the guys, I made him do a 10-page report on Prince Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z. A 10-page... fully fleshed out report, and I had to grade it, and it was great.
Oh,
but
man.
He remembers that shit to this day.
Yeah.
And every time I see him, I was like, you know who Vegeta is, right? And he's like, yeah, definitely know now, motherfucker.
Yeah, see, stuff like that, that's hilarious. That's great,
like 90% of the stuff.
Luckily, you know, I not to take us too far off topic or anything, but luckily with this episode, the type of stuff that we see, you know, it's that sort of thing. It's fun. It's, you know, it's humorous, and it's played for the humor of it, because now Scooter's there with his underwear on his outside and a carton of raw hamburger
meat to distract the dog from stealing Dean Stomper's Wilt Chamberlain signed basketball.
Do we remember why we were stealing that?
No,
it's very much it's the 10-page report on the character. That's exactly what it is.
And here's a question: no spoilers or anything, but later on when they're like playing with a basketball, are we to take that to be the Dean's signed Wilt Chamberlain basketball?
That's what I think.
Okay, because they're treating it pretty like this is just a good old
sure.
I bought this at the dollar store, you know. And
sure.
It's like
in 1966, Wilt Chamberlain was like Michael Jordan, right?
Yeah.
So that was pretty valuable.
I mean, it's not quite, but it's close. It's close enough to like in the Sandlot with the Babe Ruth ball. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you guys are just tossing this around like it's nothing. But yeah, this ends up kind of being a turnoff for Elizabeth. So now all of a sudden she's like, you know what? Stuff your luau.
Yeah. Well, it ends with he makes the thing. I can't remember how exact, but the scene ends with her going, but will we have evolved out of war?
Mm-hmm.
Dramatic music. And then we go out into the next scene, which is the rally where Duck is giving the previously mentioned speech.
Yes. Now, we haven't talked about Al at all this whole episode. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this particular moment, though, that happens right before that is really nice, because that's when...
this is where they had this really nice
conversation about fun.
Yeah.
This is the moment when he says, you didn't have fun in the college, you were a mega nerd. Yeah. Because this is, again, we get the info, it's like, you were 16, you know, in college. Of course you didn't do this type of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's
interesting. And like Sam having this sad moment, like, I don't know how to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's an interesting character moment, I think, for both of them. Because Al has this sort of moment where he's like, dude, you were 16. You were the biggest nerd ever, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like he's kind of having fun with him, but there's also still that quality that he exudes sometimes of, I don't want to say paternal, mm-hmm. But hell, I will, especially with what happens the next episode. I do think it's fitting. Al sometimes exhibits a sort of paternal quality when dealing with Sam, and I think that this is one of those moments where it's sort of like, yeah, I'm going to bust your chops a little bit because you're a big old nerd. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you know. Mm-hmm. You can have fun now, you know?
Yeah. So we get to the rally. And speaking of Al, this is a weird thing. This happens in the next episode that we're going to cover, too. Al sits down.
Yeah, he does.
And so unless he's bringing a chair into the imaging chamber with him...
I've decided that in my headcanon that the imaging chamber is kind of like the holodeck. So that...
they can recreate some things?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, you know, matter is being projected.
I mean, it's weird because it seemed like by this season, like, they had figured out more of the logistics. Like, in the first season, like, he goes down some stairs.
Yeah.
And in the first episode, he's having air blown up on him in the back of the airplane. And the one thing, it's like, air shouldn't be blowing his hair up because he's not really
there. Yeah.
So it seemed like by this point in the second season, they should have figured that out.
Yeah.
But him and Sam, like, sitting next to each other, him sitting right behind Sam and having this moment, it was still...
Although it's interesting, too, not to jump ahead, but there is a moment later in the episode where Sam bumps into him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really interesting moment, because I would defy anyone to clearly, definitively say that Dean Stockwell doesn't notice it, and it makes me also then wonder, like, is... Al noticing it, you know, like is it just a case of like Dean Stockwell, the actor, noticed it right away and was like, well, they're not going to use this take, so it's no big deal, and then they ended up putting it in the episode, or is it a case now because it's in the episode where it's just sort of like, oh shit, that happened, who knows?
Yeah, then there is a moment, close to the end of the episode where Al is like standing up against the wall, and there are like some decorations, like some lays or whatever you call them, like the flower petals, hanging off the wall. And if you look real closely, like Dean Stockwell is brushing up against those decorations.
Yeah,
but it's a TV show, and probably when they shot this, they didn't expect for it to be on home video years later.
And let's face it.
And some nerd sitting around an episode doing a podcast, whatever the hell that
it's
is.
Like, what the fuck is a podcast?
So the rally. Mm-hmm. I love this line. So Duck is giving this speech.
Taking arms up against our government.
Violence is the only language the bloated ruling class can still understand. And I love Al's line, leaning forward and saying, a duck. Is a duck. Is a duck.
Yeah.
It's a duck. It makes no sense.
No.
But I like it. Yeah.
It made plenty of sense to me.
Mm. Oh, Al. I just love Al. Oh, another thing that's interesting, too, is the star badge has returned, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Because we've not seen it.
Not since Genesis or Star Cross.
Yeah.
So it's like this little lighted up star badge that Al wears.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't really know what it signifies, if it signifies anything. You know,
what I've always accepted as having been a geek who read all the novels.
Yeah.
And they mention it just in one episode, which is in Starcross, is that before...
Project Starbright.
Before Project Quantum Leap, Sam and Al met on Project Starbright.
Yeah.
So I've always assumed that was the insignia of the Starbright project, and sometimes Al just wears it for old time's sake. So anyway, so it's at this rally that... Sam meets Elizabeth again, and this is where he officially invites her to the luau. He'll hand out flyers if she'll come to the luau.
Yeah.
I think flowers for luau, luau for flowers.
One of the things I wanted to say about this scene, and even the prior scene when he's talking to her after the class, before Scooter and after Scooter, is that Sam has started to figure out what he needs to do, and his use of, like, humor and intelligence breeds this really wonderful charm, which, let's face it, I mean, Scott Bakula, he's a charming actor, and, like, you know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why they cast the guy, but it's like he's figured it out, you know, in that first scene, when he first meets Elizabeth, he's completely out of his depth, he's like, I don't know how to talk to this girl, you know, but now he's kind of figured it out. And it's just really charming the way that he blends the intelligence and the humor. And it's just really well done. And I think that's a testament to the writing, to the acting. And I really like it. And I like the fact that it's like, oh yeah, that's how he's going to get her to the luau.
So from there, we get to the frat and we walk in. We see Guna, Brian Haley, pranking, doing a prank call saying that there's a bomb in the chemistry building. Not a blonde, a bomb. And we have this, like, comedic moment of, like, when Sam realizes what he's doing. Sam realizes this is going to be a problem later in the episode.
Yeah.
He grabs a phone from Guna and hangs it up and, like, knocks it off.
But he hangs it up with
such force, like, it comes down off the wall.
He destroys the phone.
And it falls on Guna.
Which is awesome.
Going to
come up later. and then there's this moment, too, where they're studying for the test. And they're asking, like, some complex math equation, and Sam like solves it in his head like that, and they all look at him
but
I think it's Hags or Styles or whatever the hell we want to call him ends up saying like, wild thing, I think I love you. And they're all like, we're just gonna, you know, we don't need to study, we're just gonna cheat off you, let's do something else. And that's when the cherry bomb,
and that's when Sam says he can't cheat off, like, well, we have to celebrate our failing. And this is when they come up with the idea to cherry bomb them. So so it's in this when they're sneaking in. This is when Sam asks Alec, "Did I do this when mm-hmm. I was in college?" And this is when Al drops. Like,
you were
16 years.
Okay, so real quick, I have to tell a story about my grandfather and I when we watched this episode. And this probably would have been, you know, like the second or third time I saw the episode. Like 96, 97, somewhere in through there. I remember watching this episode with my grandfather, and my grandfather went on and on about how they could never get the cherry bombs to work, so that they, what they would start to do is take tubes of toothpaste and stick them under the girls' dorm room doors with the cap off and then stomp on them so it would squirt a stream of toothpaste across the dorm room floor. And that was like their prank. And so I've not only has that embedded itself in my brain, but it is linked forever with this particular episode because yes. That's when my grandfather told me the story.
Oh, wow.
As many pranks as I pulled, I have never thought of that.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off.
My favorite college prank that I read about was, but while this one guy was gone for the weekend, mm-hmm. they filled his dorm room up with as much printer paper scraps as possible. And then they took the molding off from around the door. They took whatever, the banister, they took the doorstep up, put up drywall, painted over the drywall, put boarding along the bottom. So when he came back from the weekend, his dorm room was gone. It just had the appearance of his dorm room being gone. And the filling the paper up was so that when he knocked on the door, like, you didn't get that.
It wouldn't be like an echo.
You didn't get the hollow sound, but you actually got, like, solid wall.
That is perfect.
Wow. That takes some doing. Like, that is
yeah.
Wow, that's commitment right there.
I would love to be there just for his reaction.
Right.
So that when he goes around the corner and he looks.
Yeah.
And he's like,
gosh.
To add insult to injury, they took a lamp out of his room and put it 4 feet down from the door.
Oh my God.
So that when he started hammering, chiseling his way back into his room, he was hitting the wrong spot. So they set off the cherry bombs on the toilet and they flush.
Which is great, though, because Al is the one that directs them how to do it. Because initially they're going to just, like, use cigarettes and throw them in, and Al's like, that'll never work, and, you know, the cigarettes will get snuffed out by the toilet water, and what you need to do is you need to create a longer fuse. And so Sam basically orchestrates the whole thing. They get the longer fuse, using fuses from the other cherry bombs, throw them in there, boom, blows up. All the women start coming out of the dorm rooms.
Yeah.
Everybody's making their escape.
It is of note, this is one of the rare times in the series where we get weird sound effects. As the frat guys are bumping into each other, running out of the bathroom, you actually get boing, boing, sound effects.
Yeah. And this is also the moment that we were talking about earlier where Sam bumps into Al. And you can tell, you know, Al is literally getting bumped into.
Yeah.
But as they're all escaping, everybody's getting out. Of course, Sam is the last one to get on the ladder. And Al is, like, standing there directing traffic, like, go. Sam gets on the ladder. Elizabeth pops out, sees him.
Conveniently, it's her dorm.
Yeah. And as, you know, and as she sees him, like, there's a sort of look on her face where it's just sort of like, are you kidding me? Whatever. And then, of course, in the comedic moment, you know, Sam is on the ladder and it falls backwards and he falls. And then...
So we go from the most comedic scene in the episode.
Yeah.
Probably the most dramatic scene in the
episode
here. So it's at the library the next day. He tries to talk to her. She's mad for the prank that happened the night before. Chases her into the book stacks. This is where he surprises her in the conversation that they're having. He references the Montagues and the Capulets from Romeo and Juliet. So it's yet another moment of...
Romeo
and Juliet?
Newt Wilton is smart, huh?
Yeah. Who am I talking to? Elizabeth starts repeating Duck's talking points, and then Duck shows up.
Yes, yeah. Duck shows up, and Duck starts to, you know, basically, you know, just lay into Sam and is convinced that he's up to no good here and just trying to get into Elizabeth's pants and is not, you know, has no pure intentions.
But this is where, like, Sam brings up the good point. Like, you think 20 people at a rally is something? Like, you need...
Yeah.
You need thousands of people.
You need television.
You need television. You need publicity. You need all of that.
Yeah, and then of course this is also the moment when Elizabeth basically looks at him and says, "You don't care. You don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah,
and that's when Sam gets very upset. And
well, yeah, he presses duck up against.
He grabs Elizabeth. Actually, he grabs.
Oh,
her,
that's right. Yeah,
and that's
yeah. That was a moment. I was like, "Sam."
And
Sam,
that, well,
Sam.
But here's the thing.
I know.
Yeah. You know, like I'm not trying to say it's right or anything like that. But I will say that there's that. And we're not so far removed from it. I mean, God, the episode's almost 30 years old. But let's face it. You know, you go back and you look at old movies.
Oh, God. Yeah, stuff like this happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you got James Cagney paintbrushing women in films, mm-hmm. you know, because they say something smart or whatever. So on one hand, like, I'm not endorsing it at all, but I'm just trying to... I think one of the things we continue to do with this podcast is try to not only put things in the context of today,
sure.
but also look at them in the context of their time.
Sure.
And so I think in a TV show being shot in 1989, actually, it makes sense that he would like kind of grab her and be like,
for
wait
sure.
a minute,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, and that's when Duck, you know, goes to grab him. And that's when he throws Duck up against the stacks and he's like, my brother died in Vietnam. Don't you tell me that I don't care. And that's like,
and that's when he starts to walk away. And that's when Duck throws a line. Maybe you should have cared more before he left. Like, oh!
And Sam stops, and it's like, Sam is going to kick his ass. Like, the look on Sam's face,
yeah.
he stops, and he gets ready to turn around, and at that point, like, Elizabeth kind of plays peacemaker, and she goes up to him, and she's like, I didn't know. And Sam is still, like, he's still pissed. Like,
sure.
There, he's not just like, oh, it's okay, I'm here
yeah.
to do my mission. Like,
I mean,
he's still upset.
Yeah. And that's always the thing, it calls into the question, I'm just now, like, thinking about it, like, with Sam's memory getting Swiss cheesed every episode. Like, is this something like he's known the entire episode, or is this something that he just re-remembers in the moment?
You know, that's a really good question, because I feel like maybe if it was something that he'd known the entire episode, it would have been something that maybe would have been played on a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if maybe he... It does get drummed up. I don't know. It could just also be that the writers, you know, took it and said, well, he's known... since Disco Inferno, so he just always knows.
Mm-hmm.
I almost prefer what you just said, though.
Yeah. I feel
because it's a very explosive moment.
Yeah, they never clarify in the TV series, but in the novel series, they do clarify that he does forget details about his life from
Leap to Leap.
From Leap to Leap.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments of the episode happens right now, and that's when Elizabeth, you know, again, trying to make peace and everything, because she didn't know that he had a brother that died in Vietnam, and she feels very bad about all that, and she just looks at him, and she's like, so what do people wear to luau's? And Sam, like, Scott Bakula, it's so perfect. He doesn't give in right away. Like, he doesn't let her off the hook right away. Like, mm-hmm. he's still kind of upset. And she says that, and he's still kind of hanging on to it, and then he kind of is like, okay. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he kind of lets that smile go, and it's just a really, really nice moment. Mm-hmm. And I just love that, it, you know, it happens all in,
yeah.
in Scott's face, you know?
You know where you didn't see moments like this?
Where?
Portrait for Troy.
Oh! He's still throwing shots!
Before we go on, I want to say that moment was the exact moment that Elizabeth fell in love with Wild Thing.
Oh, yeah.
And my theory has taken shape and form that I will go through later.
Okay. Right. I'm looking forward to it.
So now we're at the luau, and this is where we learn kind of a chicken and the egg thing. The cherry bombs in the toilet are what gave Elizabeth the idea to bomb the chemistry building.
Yeah.
Damn.
Did they cherry bomb the girls' dorm in the original history, or was that like a butterfly effect thing that Sam caused by
solving the math problem?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know.
It is
very interesting.
It's an
because it does kind of create almost a paradox in a way. It's like, mm-hmm. if Sam doesn't leap in and doesn't give the solution to the problem,
sure.
and they don't decide to cherry bomb the girls' dorm room, and she doesn't get the idea to bomb the, you know, it's like,
sure.
What, huh?
Yeah.
Or maybe in this version of the universe, she comes up with the idea, whereas in the previous,
ooh,
Duck comes up with the idea.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
That's true, because Duck, when he's giving his speech, is talking about, you know,
yeah.
you got to take it to the man. That's
bombing.
That is interesting. But
so
anyway,
so they planted a bomb. There's a timer on the bomb. And she doesn't think it's a problem because there's no one going to be there. And
yeah.
Sam knows from what Al said, yeah, there is someone in the building. He tries to call and report it. First off, he misidentifies himself as Sam.
Well, but even before that, he tries to go for the phone that he destroyed.
So the other phone.
Yeah.
They think it's a prank. They hang up.
Yep.
And then Scooter is going to be the one killed in the explosion because they sent him there to get something.
They get the notes. They get the answers. Yeah.
The answers, but then it turns out it's not Scooter.
Because
by this point, Elizabeth and Sam have already run off. And this is a weird moment. And Matt points it out in his book where Al like is like shouting after Sam, like, you don't have to go there. There's no one in the building. Instead of just centering.
Yeah.
Instead of just centering in on him.
I felt the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Al, he's worked up. He's just not thinking straight.
Sure.
One thing I want to mention real quick, going back to the luau, though, and it comes back to this, too, after what we're getting into at the climax here. But there's just a really interesting contrast between Sam having fun and Sam being serious and trying to accomplish his mission. Because there, I feel like at the luau, the very beginning, we get a great sense of like, oh, this is Sam having fun. Like, he feels like, I did it. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I can have fun. We can have a couple of drinks, you know. It's like, let's go somewhere quiet and talk. And then, you know, and then it's like, the heaviness hits and it's like, oh shit, I have to do that. And immediately, like, the furor that he runs to that phone with and the, you know, and how upset he is when they don't believe him and, you know, and everything. And then, yeah, of course he's going to just grab her hand and run towards the, you know, the bomb, right? Because he's got to complete the mission, make sure nobody dies.
He's a goddamn hero.
He is. He is indeed. Sam Beckett is a hero. But luckily, you know, like, Sam and Elizabeth get there.
Yeah.
Now, we see before they do that Duck is there as well. They don't know that Duck is still there.
That's right, yeah.
But they find the bomb. And immediately, Al is like, you have to cut the blue wire, the green wire, the red wire, the orange wire, you know.
Yeah. There are a lot of incongruities, like, as far as, like, timing and seconds or whatever, but yeah, it's a TV show, whatever.
Right. But the tension is played so well throughout this whole scene.
Yes, it is.
And so, Sam goes in, he gets something to cut the wires with, they cut the wires, they stop the bomb, they embrace, everything's wonderful, and all of a sudden, Al keeps counting down.
Yeah. 437, 431.
At this point, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a second bomb, ladies and gentlemen. And again, the tension is just played so well.
So that's when Duck produces himself.
Yes. He produces himself.
Before he does that, doesn't Al say he must not have trusted Elizabeth?
That's right. Yeah. So he planted his own bomb.
That motherfucker.
Which, you know what though, Chris? Actually, it's great that you bring that up because that kind of plays right back into what you mentioned earlier about the idea that beforehand it was just Duck's idea, but then it was also Elizabeth's idea. So it almost makes sense that, like, in the original timeline, I wonder if the change isn't that there was a bomb, if the change is that there were two bombs. Like, originally there was just the one.
Sure.
But because of the influence on Elizabeth, yeah, that's... I like it. I like it, man. It's why we have you on the show.
So, second bomb, Duck produces himself.
Yes.
So Sam basically like you're not leaving, like we're all gonna die unless you tell me where the second bomb is. I love while this is going on, Sam says the line, "That's why they called me the Wild Thing."
Yeah.
The guys show up because they've chased them from the fraternity party.
And by the way, the guys are reminiscent of the Three Stooges. Did you guys get
that? Oh, yeah. They even have some of the mannerisms every once in a while. Yeah. They're doing some of the bits, absolutely.
So Al makes a reference to Knock Off the John Wayne stuff. It jumped out at me because, like this, we're also covering Another Mother today.
Where he gets,
like, there are two John Wayne references to episodes
in a row. Yeah.
The bomb is on the back of the oxygen tank. Duck finally, you know, says where it's at. They have to get rid of it really quickly.
Yeah.
Guess who comes in?
One other thing that I will say is we get a pretty, like, brutal fight between Duck and Sam. And
it's not even really a fight because, like, Duck doesn't land any blows.
Yeah.
It's just Sam pushing Duck around and just saying, no, we're not leaving.
right. And basically, like, threatening Duck to the point of, like, we're all going to die if you don't say something. Duck, when he does, the thing is Duck admits where it is and gets up and runs out of the building.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
He runs out. Yeah.
A duck is a duck.
Quack, quack.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, the Three Stooges show up to save the day.
Oh,
that thing, like, they get a... That bomb should have gone off, like, in the windowsill.
Well,
like, right in the opening. Like, it was that close.
It's TV.
Anyway.
But no, you're right.
But yeah, it's a light show, and then everybody else ducks except for Guna, who looks at bitches.
Again and wild. And even the Three Stooges, like, you don't want them to die.
No, of course
so
not.
So they're just there because, you know, they want to party. In fact, I think they're so drunk or so high or just so stupid that they don't realize the danger that they're in.
Oh, God, they have no idea. Yeah,
absolutely. You're right. No way. I mean, that's one of the things that Guna's bitching thing is. It's just sort of like,
even after the bomb goes off, yeah. He's like,
they're going to wake up the next morning.
Yeah.
And go, oh,
shit. We
oh, yes.
So yeah, the Wild Thing, they're back at the luau. Sam is you know, there's that curiosity, like, why hasn't he left yet? But he gets dressed up as the tiki guy.
Well, even before that, he plays, like, armchair psychiatrist and kind of suggests that maybe
Elizabeth's
motivation is about trying to get her parents' attention. But they drop little seeds of that throughout the episode.
I don't like that, actually. I mean,
It seemed like a shoehorned in thing, and it seemed like it kind of undercut the strength of Elizabeth's character.
It was just like,
oh, it's not really her about being against the war. It's her about trying to get mommy's and daddy's attention. And I can justify it a little bit because what we learn about Sam, like, later on in the series, like, maybe he was projecting some of his own baggage on her. But, yeah, it kind of undercut the strength of the character for me.
It did.
Like, here's the thing. I don't believe, and this is the reason why it didn't end up bothering me, even though I didn't necessarily like it, I don't believe for a second that was the impetus behind Elizabeth deciding to take her stance and be a part of the movement. I do think that perhaps there's truth to her wanting to be noticed by her parents.
Who doesn't?
But I don't think that she's doing this to get noticed.
Yeah.
So I kind of was like, yeah, I'll split the difference, you know?
Yeah.
But it's still, even said, it's still a nice scene between the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm saying, like, oh, well, they really screwed the pooch on that. Yeah.
But it turns out, like you noted before, this is one of the first times where Al shows up and says everything that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it turns out, Elizabeth is going to reconcile with her parents or do whatever, and then she's going to be a major help in stopping to end the war.
Yeah.
So then the guys come and grab him off. They get him ready. He's got to jump in the pool. And Ziggy says, Ziggy says he's got to jump in the pool. In the original history, Wild Thing broke his neck, which doesn't make sense because
he's only like a few feet off the ground.
So Sam improvises this beautiful speech.
Yes.
Death of a Thousand Limbos.
But is he improvising it? And the reason why I asked that is because there's one point where Al is basically like, no, that's not right. Like, I'm almost wondering.
Yeah, Death of a Thousand Limbos. Like, bimbos.
In the time, bimbos. Right. In the time between, like, Sam getting into costume and makeup, like, was Al coaching him? And, like, this is the speech you have to give, you know? And because now he's messing it up, and Al's just like... But then there's also a moment as he finishes the speech and everybody, even Elizabeth, is just sort of like finding a kind
she's
of
like, all right, sure,
like,
yeah.
All right, fine, he's a frat guy, but whatever. There's this moment that happens that reminds me of Disco Inferno in a way, and the reason why I say that is because in Disco Inferno, the question is how the hell didn't he know he was on a movie set when he leaps in? Sure, he's disoriented, whatever. How the hell does Sam not know he's hooked up to a rigging system to carry him up?
Because that's like a harness that they got to put around. Yeah.
But they lift him up. He's probably a good 15 feet in the air.
Sure.
So, if it was pro wrestling, he'd be 30 feet in the air. But he's like 15 feet up. And now you realize it's like, well, no wonder Wild Thing broke his neck. It's like a 3-foot pool of water. And he's diving from 15 foot up.
In the original history, Wild Thing missed the pool entirely. And you gotta figure, probably in the original history, Wild Thing was drunk.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how you missed the pool.
Here's an interesting thought. If the luau and the bombing took place at the same time, the same night, in the original history, wouldn't they have all known that the bomb went off? Did they just keep going on with their luau in spite of the fact that the bomb went off?
That did bug me, but... rationalizing it now, like, everything got pushed back because they had to go to the chemistry building.
It's
very possible that the jumping into the pool happened before the bomb went off.
Yeah.
I can even take it one further. Nobody noticed that a fucking bomb went off?
That's true. You're right, because
a bomb did go off.
So nobody was, like, looking for the loud sound. Maybe they're, we should check with this party, see what's going on.
And they just shut down. Yeah, they just made their way back.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey. No one got hurt. All 40, right?
Yeah, 42 minutes of TV. Exactly. Yeah. So Al says, if you want to leap, you got to leap.
Yep.
He jumps into the pool. Before attempting to jump in the pool the first time, his chant is TKB is the life for me.
Yeah. He makes the leap. And he doesn't break his neck. Well, the funny thing is, too, is like one of the things that I couldn't help but think about when he pops up out of the water is how well his makeup and costume stayed in place. But yeah, he comes up and almost immediately leap out.
Yeah. TKB is the life for me.
Yep. TKB is the life for me.
Then I think like him. Oh, yeah. Al says aloha.
Yeah.
Sam. Yeah. He turns around, waves goodbye, and he leaps.
Which, quick digression, it's interesting to think what happens for Al when he's present when Sam leaps out.
You know, that's really interesting because earlier in the episode, they're having a conversation where Al basically says, hey, you do the thing that you need to do, and then you... And he imitates the leaping effect. But there's a moment in a later episode where Sam specifically asks him, what does it look like when I leap?
Yeah.
And Al says, I don't know. When you leap, I go back into the imaging chamber.
Which makes sense.
Which always made me assume, like, there are other references, like, throughout the series where Al can see, like, the leaping effect that we see. But later on, Al says the same in another episode where it just, like, as soon as, like, Al leaps, like, basically, like, the hologram just disappears and he's just standing in a blue room.
Right. Which, let's just take a quick moment. And it's taken us 20 episodes to get here. Let's just take a quick moment to appreciate the sound effect. And, I mean, just the entire leap-out effect. Not just the sound, but the... I mean, it really is perfect.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
It's just perfect.
And it's so easy to recreate now in editing systems.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people do it all the time for various things.
So I was going to save this story for when we got to the season 3 premiere episode. But when I was in high school, freshman in high school, I attempted basically to shoot an episode of Quantum Leap in class. We were using one of the existing scripts. I just transcribed it from watching the episode. And I discovered one day, messing around with the camera, and this is like 1995, 96.
Sure. Yeah.
I was pointing the camera at the TV that the camera was hooked up to. So in other words, with the camera, whenever I moved the camera, we saw it on the TV. So when I turned the feedback from the camera being pointed at the TV screen that it was hooked up to, basically, for a 15-year-old kid who was trying to shoot an episode, it mimicked the leap-out effect enough where I was like, well, we got that anyway.
There we go.
So he leaps out, and he's standing in a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kids fighting, and then all of a sudden there's this little girl tugging on him.
Mommy.
And that's when Sam's like, I'm a mommy.
Mm.
And there we have it.
Yeah.
Quick note, just to whet everyone's appetite, I will say that we just talked about her in the last episode when we were talking about Portrait for Troyan, because her name is Troyan, but that little girl who's tugging on Sam is Troyan Belisario, the daughter of Deborah Pratt and Donald Belisario.
Mm-hmm.
We did not mention Foley, and we'll definitely talk about it a little more in the next episode, but she's had quite the career, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there we have it. There's Animal Frat.
You guys ready for my...
I am so ready for this.
All right. So Elizabeth is Homer Simpson's mom, Mona Simpson.
Oh, my God.
And Wild Thing is Abe Simpson. Right?
Wow.
So in an alternate universe, she goes on with the bombing. She goes into hiding.
Yep.
Wild Thing and Elizabeth have a child.
Yeah.
Ends up being Homer Simpson.
Absolutely.
She has to go on a run. He's disgruntled because she took him from his wild partying football lifestyle to raise young Homer Simpson.
I love it.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
So, Sam saves Homer from not knowing his mom his entire life.
That's incredible.
I would.
That is my
theory. I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's ever happened, but I would love a Quantum Leap like cameo crossover, whatever, into The Simpsons. It would be hilarious.
I know Family Guy did it a couple times.
Yeah,
but. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so real quick, just so everyone's listening is on the same page, yeah, in The Simpsons, Mona Simpson is Homer's mother, and Mona has been on the run from the law because she sabotaged Mr. Burns' biological warfare laboratory. So very similar to kind of like what we're talking about with Elizabeth. So I totally get where you're coming from. I think it's hilarious. Well, there you have it.
But, yeah.
Chris's theory.
He has tied together Quantum Leap. And The Simpsons.
Two of my favorite things, really. So I will say Animal Frat gets a big thumbs up from me. I really like the episode a lot. I just love so much about Sam feeling like a fish out of water early on in the episode, having to find his way into, you know, who, not only who Newt is, which can be disregarded somewhat, obviously, because Sam beefs up his intelligence, so to speak, but figuring out how to connect with Elizabeth. Mm.
She is in for a rude awakening when Wild Thing returns.
Well, yeah, ain't that the truth? Before we go, Dennis, you probably have a better list than I do, but obviously Russell, Rosen...
Most of them commented on Another Mother.
They did. Yeah. I did notice that. But just in general, like, thank you guys so much for your comments. Yeah. And for Another Mother in particular, we're really looking forward to addressing some of what was said, because you guys actually expressed some things I think that Dennis and I have already expressed to one another. We you know, honestly, just a little look behind the scenes, we don't often talk to one another a whole lot about the episodes before we do the podcast. This past week has been a little different. We've exchanged some texts and things and,
sure,
and chatted a little bit, you know, vaguely, because we like to try to save it for the podcast. But I think your guys' engagement has even caused us to engage in a way that we weren't doing before. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, it gives us an idea of like what we need to come in and talk about.
Yeah.
It's important to people who are listening to the podcast. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening. Otherwise, we're just three guys in a microphone, so...
shouting into the void.
Exactly. All right. Anybody got anything else for Animal Frat?
No.
It was good. We liked it. Right. All right.
I loved it, man. Reminded me of the good old days.
And there ain't nothing wrong with that. Well, all right.
Now I'm old, but I think Chris.
Yeah. You're not old. You're not old, man.
Shit, dude. I feel old.
On that note, we got to leap.
We got to leap out of here.
So we're going to leap.
See you next time. Bye-bye. And remember to hit the subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you may be listening. Until next time. Can't see.